with silly answers. See, I'm your favorite auntie. I'm here to have an adventure with you. We're here to sing songs. We're here to dance and read. We love being loved. We want to be there for you. So everybody have a little fun and start dancing with Silly and Sissy. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Radio Theater with your favorite auntie, Silly and Sissy. Thanks for joining us today. And let's do a little dance. And Dino's here. Yay, Dino! Let's go. And Turtle, we're going to dance with Turtle. And Dino, let's dance, guys. All right, thanks for dancing with us. One more jig. Let's dance. Woo woody woo woody woo. Silly and Sissy likes to dance. All right. I love to dance, and so does Dino. Well, hello, Dino. How are you today? Oh, I'm fine, Silly Auntie Sissy. How are you? Well, I'm doing good tonight. Now that I'm with you, can I get a hug? Oh, yes. Oh, thanks, Dino. I love hugging you. You're my best friend. Well, thank you, Silly Auntie Sissy. You're mine, too. I love being with you. That was a fun song. I love dancing. Oh, me too. Dancing is fun. It's a great way to move around and just get all your energy out and go gollopy goo and rollopy roo. Is that a word, Silly Auntie Sissy? It is a word. It's a good word. Yeah, it is. It's a fun word. Well, what are we going to do today, Silly Auntie Sissy? Well, we're going to read. Remember, we started reading Secret Garden? And I have a book with Daniel the Tiger. It's called Let's Play Together. It's a very fun book, and it gives parents ideas and aunties or uncles or grandmas or grandpas ideas of things to do together. And it was inspired by Mr. Rogers. Oh, I know Mr. Rogers. I like that show. It's true. It's called Let's Play Together. There's a lot of games and arts and crafts, like puzzles and animal sounds, and growing up. Let's start with find a way to play together. Let's sing this. How about we start with a song? Would you like to sing a song? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you be my neighbor? It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. A beautiful day for a neighbor. A beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? It's Daniel Tiger's neighborhood, a land of make-believe. Won't you ride along with me? Yes, I will, I will. It's Daniel Tiger's neighborhood, so much to do, so much to see. Won't you ride along with me? We've got lots of things for you to meet and lots of friends for you to meet. It's a land of make-believe. Yay! A friendly face on every street, just wanting to greet you. Prince Wednesday skips royally by, Miss Elena's waving it high. Won't you ride along with me? Oh, the owl's reading a book, Katrina's twirling look. Won't you ride along? Yes, 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 I'll ride along, let's go. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor in beautiful Tiger's neighborhood. So more like... There's a lot more songs, and we'll find more. That was fun. Well, today we can find out about how to make toothpaste, and we can finger paint. How to make there's a pretend dentist. And it's okay to say I feel jealous. There's so many things when a pet dies. That's very sad. Well, isn't it? Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You can make self hardening model Play-Doh. 1.5 cups of salt, 4 cups of flour, 1.5 cups of water. Mix all the ingredients together, stir very hard, yeah. And knead. Creations made from the mixture should harden overnight. Baking and or painting final products will hinder mold. What does that mean, hinder? That means it'll stop it from hardening. Well, there you go. Self-hardening modeling Play-Doh. You can make your own homemade play and glue. How fun. Alright, let's try that next time, Silly Auntie Sissy. Yes, indeed. We'll find more Play-Doh. We'll make our own Play-Doh next time. And you make yours! Yay! We're going to have fun. And now we're going to read Secret Garden. Yay! Now you pipe in, Daniel, if you have any questions. There's Jessie, our favorite kitty cat. You pipe in if you have any questions. Okay, I will. Let's go. Let's go. You remember where we were last time? Mistress Mary was just about to leave India. Mary had liked to look at her mother. Mary had liked to look at her mother from a distance, and she had thought her very pretty, but as she knew very little of her, she scarcely had been expected to love her or to miss her very much when she was gone. She did not miss her at all, in fact, as she was a self-absorbed child. She gave her entire thought to herself, as she had always done. If she had been older, she would not, no doubt, have been very anxious as being left alone in the world. But she was very young, and as she has always been taken care of, she supposed she always would be. What she thought was that she would be like to know. What she wanted to know is if she was going to nice people. Who would be polite to her and give her own way as her Aya did and the other native servants had done. She knew that she was not going to stay at the English clergyman's house where she was taken at first. She did not want to stay anyway. The English clergyman was poor, and he had 5 children nearly all the same age, and they wore shabby clothes and were always quarreling and snatching toys from each other. Oh, no. I know, Daniel. I know, Dino. Mary hated their untidy bungalow and was so disagreeable to them that after the first day or two, nobody would play with her. By the second day, they had given her a nickname which made her furious. It was Basil who thought of it at first. Basil was a little boy with impudent blue eyes, intense blue eyes, and a turned-up nose, and Mary hated him. She was playing by herself under a tree just as she had been playing the day the cholera broke out. She was making heaps of earth and paths for a garden, and Basil came and stood near to watch her. Presently he got nearer. He got rather interested and suddenly made a suggestion. "Why don't you put a heap of stones there and pretend it is a rockery?" he said. "There in the middle," and he leaned over to point. "Go away," cried Mary. "I don't want to play with boys. Go away." For a moment, Basil looked angry, and then he began to tease her. He was always teasing his sisters. He danced around and around and made faces and sang and laughed. "Mistress Mary, quite contrary, how dare you, how does your garden grow with silver bells and cockle shells and marigolds all in a row?" He sang it until the other children heard and laughed too, and the crosser Mary got, the more they sang "Mistress Mary, quite contrary." And after that, as long as she stayed with them, they called her Mistress Mary, quite contrary, when they spoke of her to each other, and often when they spoke to her. "You're going to be sent home," Basil said, "at the end of the week, and we're glad of it." "I am glad of it, too." "Where is home?" answered Mary. "She doesn't even know where home is," said Basil with a 7-year-old scorn. "It's England, of course. Our grandmother lives there, and our sister Mabel was sent to her last year. You're not going to your grandmama. You have none. You're going to your uncle. His name is Mr. Archibald Craven." "I don't know anything about him," snapped Mary. I know you don't, Basil answered. You don't know anything. Girls never do. I heard father and mother talking about him. He lives in a great big desolate old house in the country, and no one goes near him. He's so cross, he won't let them, and they wouldn't come if he would let them. He's a hunchback, and he's horrid. I don't believe you, said Mary, and she turned her back and stuck her fingers in her ears, because she would not listen anymore. But she thought over it a great deal afterward, and when Mrs. Crawford told her that night that she was going to sail away to England in a few days and go to her uncle, Mr. Archibald Craven, who lived at Misselwaite Manor, she looked very stony and stubbornly uninterested, that they did not even know what to think about her. They tried to be kind to her, but she only turned her face away when Mrs. Crawford attempted to kiss her and hold her stiffly. When Mrs. Crawford patted her shoulder. She's such a plain child, Mrs. Crawford said pityingly afterward, and her mother was such a pretty creature. She had a very pretty manner, too, and Mary has the most unattractive ways I ever saw in a child. The children call her Mistress Mary quite contrary, and though it's a naughty thing of them, one can't help but understand it. Well, perhaps if her mother had carried her pretty face and her pretty manners oftener in the nursery, Mary might have learned some pretty ways, too. It is very sad now. The poor, beautiful thing is gone, to remember that many people never even knew that she had a child at all. I believe she scarcely ever looked at her, sighed Mrs. Crawford. When her Aya was dead, there was no one to give a thought to her. Poor little thing. Think of the servants running away and leaving her all alone in that deserted bungalow. Colonel McGraw said he nearly jumped out of his skin when he opened the door and found her standing by herself in the middle of the room. Mary made the long voyage to England under the care of an officer's wife who was taking her children to leave them in a boarding school. She was very much absorbed in her own little boy and girl, and was rather glad to hand the child over to the woman Mr. Archibald Craven had sent to meet her in London. The woman was a housekeeper at Misselwaite Manor, and her name was Mrs. Medlock. She is a stout woman with very red cheeks and sharp black eyes. She wore a very purple dress, a black silk mantle with jet fringe on it, and a black bonnet with purple velvet flowers, which stuck up and trembled when she moved her head. Mary did not like her at all, but as she was seldom liked people, there was nothing remarkable in that. Besides which, it was very evident Mrs. Medlock did not think much of her. My word, she's a plain little piece of goods, she said, and we've all heard that her mother was a beauty. She hasn't handed much of it down, has she, ma'am? Perhaps she will improve as she grows older, the officer's wife said good-naturedly. If she were not so shallow and had a nicer expression, well, her features are rather good. Children alter so much. Well, she'll have to alter a good deal, answered Mrs. Medlock, and there's nothing likely to improve children as Misselwaite, if you ask me. They thought Mary was not listening, because she was standing a little apart from them at the window of the private hotel they had gone to. She was watching the passing buses and cabs and people, but she heard quite well, and was made very curious about her uncle and the place he lived in. What sort of place was it? And what would he be like? What was a hunchback? She had never seen one. Perhaps there was none in India. Since she had been living in other people's houses and had no Aya, she began to feel lonely and to think queer thoughts, which were now new to her. She had begun to wonder why she had never seemed to belong to anyone, and why her father and mother had been, while her mother and father had been alive even. Other children seemed to belong to their mothers and fathers, but she had never seemed to really be anyone's little girl. She had servants and food and clothes, but no one had taken any notice of her. She did not even know that this was because she was a disagreeable child, but then, of course, she did not know she was disagreeable. She often thought that other people were, but she did not know that she was so herself. She thought Mrs. Medlock the most disagreeable person that had ever seen, that she had ever seen, with her common, highly covered face and her common, fine bonnet. When the next day they set on to their journey to Yorkshire, she walked through the station to the railway carriage, with her head up and trying to keep up as far as away from her as she could, because she did not want to seem to belong to her. It would have been made her angry to think people imagined she was her little girl. But Mrs. Medlock was not in the least disturbed by her and her thoughts. She is the kind of woman who would stand no nonsense from young ones. At least that is what she would have said if she had been asked. She had not wanted to go to London just when her sister Maria's daughter was going to be married, but she had a comfortable, well-paid place as housekeeper at Misselthwaite Manor, and the only way in which she could keep it was to do at once what Mr. Archibald Craven told her to do. She never dared even ask a question. Can you imagine never even asking a question? I can't. Captain Lennox and his wife died of the cholera, Mr. Craven had said in a short, cold way. Captain Lennox's was my wife's brother, and I'm their daughter's guardian. The children is to be brought here. You must go to London and bring her yourself. So she packed her small trunk and made the journey. Mary sat in the corner of the railway carriage and looked glum and frightful and plain. She had nothing to read or to look at, and she had foiled her thin little black-gloved hands in her lap. Her black dress made her look yellower than ever, and her limp light hair struggled from under her black crepe hat. A more married-looked young one I've never seen in my life, said Mrs. Murdoch. Mrs. Medlock thought. Married is a Yorkshire word, and means spoiled and pettish. She had never seen a child who sat so still without doing anything. And at last she got tired of watching her and began to talk in a brisk, hard voice. I suppose you might as well tell you something about where you're going to. Do you know anything about your uncle? No, said Mary. Never heard your father or mother talk about him? No, said Mary, frowning. She frowned because she remembered that her father and mother had never really talked to her about anything in particular. Certainly, they had never told her things. Humph, murmured Mrs. Medlock, staring at her queer, unresponsive little face. She did not say anything more for a few minutes, and then she began again. Well, I suppose you might as well know something to prepare you. You're going to a queer place. Mary said nothing at all, and Mrs. Medlock looked rather comforted by her apparent indifference, but after taking a breath she went on, not but that it's a grand place, big in a gloomy way, and Mr. Craven's proud of it in his very way, and that's gloomy enough too. The house is 600 years old, and it's on the edge of the moor, and there's near 100 rooms in it, though most of them shut up and locked, and there's pictures and fine old furniture and things that have been there for ages, and there's a big park around it and gardens and trees with branches trailing into the ground. Some of them, she paused and took another breath, but there's nothing else, she ended suddenly. Mary had begun to listen in spite of herself. It all sounded so unlike India, and nothing new rather attracted her, but she did not intend to look as if she were interested. That was one of the unhappy, disagreeable ways, so she sat still. Well, said Mrs. Murdoch, what do you think of it? Nothing, she answered. I know nothing about such places. That made Mrs. Medlock laugh a short snort of laugh. Eh, she said, but you're like an old woman. Don't you care? It doesn't matter, said Mary, whether I care or not. You are right enough there, said Mrs. Medlock. It doesn't. What you're about to be kept at Misselthwaite Manor, for I don't know, unless because it's the easiest way, he's not going to trouble himself about you. He doesn't ever trouble himself about no one. She stopped herself as if she had just remembered something in time. He's got a crooked back, she said. That set him wrong. He's a sour young man and got no good at all of his money and big place till he was married. Mary's eyes turned toward her in spite of her intention not to seem to care. She had never thought of her hunchback being married, and she was a trifle surprised. Mrs. Medlock saw this, and as she was talking to the woman, she continued with more interest. That was one way of passing some of the time, at any rate. She was a sweet, pretty thing, and he'd have walked the world over to get her a blade of grass if she wanted. Nobody thought she'd marry him, but she did. And people said she married him for his money, but she didn't. She didn't, positively. When she died, Mary gave a little involuntary jump. Oh, did she die? She explained, quite without meaning to. She had just remembered a French fairy tale story she had once read called Requête la Humph. It had been about a poor hunchback and a beautiful princess. It had been made her suddenly sorry for Mr. Archibald Craven. Yes, she died, Mrs. Medlock answered, and it made him queerer than ever. He cares about nobody. He won't see people most of the time he goes away, and when he is at Misselthwaite, he shuts himself up in the West Wing and won't let anyone but Pincher see him. Pincher's an old fellow, but he takes good care of him when he was a child, and he knows his ways even now. Sounded like something in a book, and did not make Mary more cheerful. A house with 100 rooms, nearly all shut up and with their doors locked, a house on the edge of a moor, whatever a moor was, sounded dreary. A man with a crooked back who shut himself up also, she stared out the window with her lips pinched together, and it seemed quite natural the rain should have begun to pour down in gray fluttering lines and splash and stream down the window panes. If the pretty wife had been alive, she might have made things cheerful by being something like her mother, and by running in and out and going to parties as she had done in frocks, full of lace, but she was not there anymore. He didn't expect to see me because you needn't expect to see him, because 10 to 1 you won't, said Mrs. Medlock, and you mustn't expect that there'll be people to talk to. You'll have to play about and look after yourself. You'll be told what rooms you can go in and what you can't, and what rooms to keep out of. There's gardens enough, but when you're in the house, don't go wandering and poking about, said sour little... I shall not want to go poking about, said sour little Mary. Well, good, said Mrs. Medlock. Mr. Craven won't have it. And just as suddenly as she had begun to rather feel sorry for Mr. Archibald Craven, Mary began to cease to be sorry and to think he was unpleasant enough to deserve all that had happened to him. And she turned her face toward the streaming panes of the window of the railway carriage and listened to the rain go clickety-clack on the window and gazed out of the gray rainstorm, which looked as if it would go on forever and ever. She watched it so long and steady that the grayness grew heavier and heavier before her eyes, and she fell asleep. The end. Well, chapter 3, Across the Moor, and we shall read that tomorrow. Oh, I like that, said... Do you, Dino? It's a very good story, isn't it? It is. I like it a lot. It's fun. Well, tomorrow we'll sing some more songs and play some games. Would you like that, Dino? I will. I like to play pretend. Oh, I know. So, let's say goodbye then. Goodbye from Silly and Sissy and me, Dino. We had so much fun. We'll be here tomorrow, and won't you be my neighbor? Won't you be my neighbor? Bye, everybody. Thanks for having us. Bye.